Mini episode 398 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 398. We have a very special conversation that we are taping today with a gentleman who is a great in the field of professional wrestling and now can be seen weekly on a tremendous reality show, Preacher's Daughters. It's a great pleasure to bring on the program a man for whom I had the T-shirt of him back when I was a youngster and subsequently ended up wearing that thing in college and ended up my freshman year of college acquiring in the dorm the nickname Nikita after this gentleman, Nikita Koloff. I still have that T-shirt. It still barely fits me to this day. Very pleased to have him on. Nikita Koloff, welcome to the program, sir. Pleasure to speak with you today.
Well, good evening. I feel quite honored that you were able to bore the nickname. And gosh, you just made me feel real old, Rick, when you said when you were a kid. But it's okay. It's all good.
There's not a tremendous gap in years between us. I won't get to our respective ages there, but not a tremendous gap. You were a young wrestler at the time, actually, as a matter of fact. But it's funny because subsequently I've gotten ragged on about that the T-shirt that I had. I ended up getting it at the stadium show in 87 after you had already turned face. So I've been ragged on about that yeah, you waited till he wasn't a pro-Soviet character anymore till you got the T-shirt. But I suspect that was the case with most people that were wearing it. Right, Nikita?
That's pretty amazing. Now, which one do you have? The yellow, the kind of the gold T-shirt? What is that the one you have?
Yes, yellowish, goldish, and yes, I'll have to get a picture of that to you. But yes, it still barely kind of fits me to this day. And again, I was a tremendous fan back in the day. I mean, you talk about that, and when your character changed, as it did, that was of course after Magnum TA's very unfortunate car accident. In terms of the formation of that and the Superpowers tag team with Dusty Rhodes, how did that come together? I know that everybody was in a real sense of shock and grief at the time, but how did the wheels start turning to eventually turn you into a character to take Magnum's place next to Dusty?
Well, it's an interesting story because, you know, up to that point, of course, the Russian guys have always been the heels, always been the bad guys. And I actually came back from a tour in Japan with the Giant Baba over there, and I was actually in Philadelphia the first night I got the news of Magnum's accident. I thought they were kidding me. I was up in the room with Jim Crockett, the promoter, and Dusty Rhodes, and they were sharing with me what had happened, and it took them a while to convince me that they were really weren't just ribbing on the square, but that they were really this was for real. And not just trying to pull my leg. And once they convinced me of that, then they went on to say that they had an idea and unfolded the idea. And the idea was for me to make a turn and become tag team partners with Dusty, which had, again, never really been done before with a Russian. And, you know, said, you know, take a day or two, you know, think it over, think about it. And, you know, if you're open to doing that, then that's what we'll do. And that's kind of how it all unfolded in a dressing room in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Wow. And that was one of those unbelievably shocking moments in wrestling. I mean, first of all, having the crash reported on, it was very shocking and very sad. But I think it was worldwide that they first aired the footage on. I don't remember which of the shows it was specifically. I think it was worldwide. But, yeah, seeing you come out as the mystery partner with Dusty Rhodes there was truly, truly unbelievable. Something I have to ask you about from your interviews at the time. The one word, or I don't, maybe it's more than one word because I don't know Russian, but the thing that I always associate with you, Shitowata, what does that mean, Nikita? I just need to ask that for the record. Is there any meaning to it?
The great mystery. If I've been asked that once, I've been asked that hundreds of times. And people will text it, or they'll tweet it, or they'll, and they, you know, it's just funny. I just have to laugh. It was just really, honestly, an expression I came up with. I took, you know, just studied some of the Russian language and a few of the phrases and a few of the words to just put some phrases together to fool these stupid Americans, you understand. And so it was just more of a kind of a, like, what's going on, or, you know, kind of like a phrase for what is this, or what's going on, you know, or, you know, kind of a closing statement to an interview, and obviously it caught on.
If people texted you that and the spelling of it, chances are you've never seen it spelled the same way twice, because I don't even know, beyond the phonetics of it, Nikita, I don't even know how anyone would go by. Is it a G-H? Is it a Z? Is it a Q-H? I don't even know how you would start that, but...
Well,
outstanding.
Spell it in English. It was all Russian lettering, so yeah, they do butcher it pretty good when they try to send it over to them. I know immediately what they're talking about, but it's pretty comical, actually.
Yeah, I can very well imagine that. Yeah, I wouldn't even know how you would. It probably, it's like snowflakes. There are no two spellings of it. I would suppose they're the same. But before we move on to anything more contemporary in your life, something that I have to ask you. Point of personal privilege here. I bring this up with all of your old colleagues from back in the day here. I always want to get a sense on this here. And I've asked this of a gentleman who's described himself as your best friend, Joe Laurinaitis, Road Warrior Animal. Also asked it of J.J. Dillon, Tully Blanchard, Jim Cornette, Lex Luger, your good friend. They've all given me the same answer, and I would be surprised if your answer wasn't the same as theirs. But it goes back to the fact that back in the day, watching the product, the guy who was my favorite wrestler as a kid, blue-collar wrestler, Ronnie Garvin. And that's a guy who's really, I think, been unfairly dumped on for the way that the world title change went in 1987 with Ric Flair. And people looking back on it and saying, gee, how did that guy ever win the world title? But it was a thing where I really kind of always felt like you had to be there and you had to understand just how over the guy was. You were on both sides of the fence with that face turn. You were in a position to be against him. You were in a position to be tagging with him, I would guess, from time to time. What were your senses as a coworker of Ronnie Garvin about what his place was in the promotion, and how difficult it might be for people to understand at this point in time just how much he meant?
The hands of stone, Ronnie Garvin. I tell you, he was just a tremendous asset and a talent to the organization. Dependable, hard worker, certainly deserving of not only a title shot, but to have the gold around his waist. He had spent many committed years to the profession, and I don't know too many people. I don't even know that anyone comes to mind that, you know, really had a negative thing to say about Ronnie Garvin. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, people can say what they want, but I just feel a very well-deserved, for him, well-deserved accomplishment for all of his dedicated years to the profession.
Absolutely, Nikita, and I think it really tends to be more so internet revisionism and people just kind of looking at it. And again, people who weren't really plugged into what was happening at the time, just to feel like how over the guy was. You know, like when he'd be in there with Flair and it'd go the time limit, and five more minutes. Yeah. You always got the sense he was just 5 more minutes away. To all the young marks out there like myself, just 5 more minutes away from getting the beat down on Ric Flair. And I guess it did happen the one night in the cage in Detroit. But yeah, no, very well said. Everybody's always answered the question the same way, of just that if you're ripping on the guy, you just don't get it as far as what he meant to the promotion at the time.
You know, he wasn't the most flashy guy. He wasn't the most flamboyant guy, you know, but that was okay. You know, you had a very mixture of styles of wrestling and personas. And so he was a great addition, you know, to that whole mixture of personas. So anyway, just thought I'd add that as well.
Oh, great point. Definitely. And Something I want to ask you about as well, that from that time period there, it was certainly, as has come to be known subsequently, time period of kayfabe. Like, for example, if you and I were having this conversation 25 years ago, you'd be obliged to be doing it in that Russian accent that you were doing such a good job with. But in terms of what it was like and going around at that time, I know and I've read extensively that you pretty much stayed in character in public, talked in the accent, conducted everything that way. But I'm just wondering, on a personal level, was it a little bit easier once you turned in terms of the obligations that you had as far as, again, I go back to when Joe Laurinaitis had been on with us previously and about you and him being such very good friends and you guys had some great matches together with your respective teams, but the obligation to not hang out with him in public or anything like that, for as close as you guys are, did it make your life a little bit easier once you were turned there and you were able to more openly associate with Joe in public?
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, to be able to, you know, travel with him, and we have some very fond memories going back to those days of he and I and Sting and Luger, you know, traveling up and down the highways and byways of America, and, you know, rooming together at times in hotels, and a lot of great memories. And so certainly that certainly made it easier for sure than when we opposed each other and, you know, had to, you might say, live separate lives. And so, definitely brings back a lot of great memories.
Sure. I just kind of wondered about that on a human level, the fact that you really couldn't openly associate with him in public your first couple of years that you were both in the promotion together. And looking at it as well, in terms of the Road Warriors, of course, the team that was set up to copy them in the WWF involved your old colleague and friend Barry Darso. And I read an interview recently. This was very interesting. I had not come across this previously, where you had said that the real talk about you possibly making the jump there surrounded being a part of Demolition. I found that to be very interesting because I thought your character at the time would have been custom made for Vince to put in there against Hulk Hogan as the big bad Soviet. But if you'd gone there, it would have been potentially as Demolition?
Well, yeah, obviously, you know, the magazines in its day and time, you know, were touting the idea of the Russian Nightmare against, you know, Hulk Hogan, and it would have I'm sure been made for quite an interesting series of matches between he and I. That was really more of something that Barry approached me with when he informed me that he was really looking seriously at making that move, and you know, would I go with him? And for me, at that point, I felt I had committed and had put in so much effort into, you know, the Russian Nightmare character, to really give all that up and go and take on a whole new persona and kind of, you might say, start all over again. Wasn't something I was interested in doing, and really a lot of that also, even more so than that, just had to do with my respect for Joe and Mike and the Road Warriors. And I just didn't feel like it would be, for me anyway, the right thing to do to, you know, go there and kind of do a, you know, kind of a carbon copy of sorts of what they were doing in the WCW NWA days.
That's a very good point as well, because, yeah, that's how a lot of people took that tag team, at least initially. And because the guys in it were such strong workers, eventually they were able to get to a level of respect that maybe people didn't expect initially. But, that's absolutely right as far as how people saw them, and that's a very good point. But turning to things more contemporary in your life, after leaving the business, after going onto the path of evangelism, subsequently now, people are able to tune in and see you on a show on Lifetime Preacher's Daughters, which, of course, features your family as well as a couple of other ones. I'm very interested in the origins of this project as far as your participation in it. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that with your daughter having a fairly high-profile dad, that had something to do with it, that somebody who'd gotten into the evangelism business after the platform of professional wrestling. But how did this come to be with your family being featured on this show and you guys initially coming to the attention of the producers?
Well, it's been an interesting journey, Rick, over the last 20 plus years since leaving the wrestling business. And, you know, little did I know about a year later that I, you know, find myself at an altar, surrendering my heart to my life to Jesus Christ. That was not on my radar at that time in my life. I was on a quest of sorts, you know, looking for what life held next for me. Never in a million years did I ever think it, you know, that ministry was on the horizon. But 17 October 1993, I did indeed find myself at an altar in Concord, North Carolina. And that decision that day, that encounter, set me on a path, on a course that, as I look back now over the last 20 or so years, has been absolutely, really just astounding. I mean, compared to the things I did prior to that, everything else looks pale in comparison to that. Now, fast forward, having traveled to 26 different countries and written 3 books and all the things that I've been privileged to do, this door of opportunity opened up to come back into television. And really, Colby's mother was the initiator of that. There was something posted on the internet about wanting to interview preachers' daughters. And so she submitted Colby's information. One conversation led to another, to interviews, and eventually to interview me. And long and short, my understanding, out of about 1,200 families, we were selected last year for season one, 3 families out of about 1,200. And the irony to it all, Rick, the irony is, I don't know how much the Think Factory Media and the people in Hollywood knew of Nikita Koloff, but the guy who came up with the original idea of a show called Preacher's Daughters, who I had the privilege to meet last year, also had that T-shirt you're talking about of Nikita Koloff and was a Nikita Koloff fan years ago, which was incredibly ironic, not knowing that I would end up being one of the families on the show itself and that whole concept. So that's kind of how it evolved.
Well, again, and this is something that, you know, clearly not everybody is going to get, but the whole saying about God works in mysterious ways, I mean, if that doesn't prove it right there, that, again, it would be a Nikita fan that would be involved in the process. And again, I want to commend you, as I have Tully and Lex, for being out there spreading a good message. It's definitely something that I personally endorse and personally feel like is a great thing that you guys are doing. And I'm curious, when I was talking to Lex, this hadn't been the case where he had not crossed paths. Have you had a chance to cross paths with Tully Blanchard in the course of him doing the prison ministries? Have you guys ever bumped into one another out there, both separately working for God these days?
Yeah, we do occasionally. In fact, probably within the last November, we ended up at the same Legends autograph weekend and had a chance to just reminisce a bit and catch up. And of course, he is doing great things within the world of prison ministry, and I'm more out there in mainstream, you know, churches, you know, on Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, men's conferences. I'm involved very heavily in a ministry called Fellowship of the Sword, where, in fact, this coming about 10 days from now, we'll be taking 27 men up on the mountaintop and spending 5 days just away from all of life's distractions, and I'll be facilitating that event. And so I have a very diversified audience that I'm able to minister to now, and I have done some prison ministry. Now, I've not tag-teamed with in the prisons, but I have done some prison ministry, so it's been pretty cool.
Yeah. It's I have to say that there was one thing that Tully told us about on the program that I found to be kind of a sad reality, because I asked him, because I've long looked up to Charles Colson, and I asked Tully if he got a chance to cross paths with him before he unfortunately passed away. Tully said, no, I wanted to. I never got a chance to, and it turns out that it's almost sort of like the Crockett and McMahon of the prison ministry world. I guess there's two big organizations out there, and one doesn't really have a lot to do with the other, and Colson was with one, and Tully was with the other. So I guess that's just one of those sad realities that sometimes not everybody's able to get on the same page and work together for things. Maybe it's just part of human nature, but I thought it was very interesting when Tully mentioned that.
Yeah, and it is. Well, listen, it's people are people, right? I mean, you know, right. We have all these diversified denominations all across the world, and you'd like to think, hey, we're all on the same team, right? We're all out there trying to share the good news, the gospel message of salvation through Jesus, and yet it seems that, you know, at times we can't agree on doctrine, and we can't agree on, you know, some think it's great to raise your hands and some think it's not right to raise your hands. And, you know, I've always said this, Rick. I've had the privilege of ministering, I think now in 26 or 27 different, I call them divisions. They're more known as denominations. But and my message at times is really one and the same. I don't care what the label is outside, I don't care what the banner that you've got hanging out there, I don't care. I don't care if it's Lutheran or Church of God or Assemblies of God or Baptist or Presbyterian. I don't care about that. What I do care about is, have you surrendered your heart and life to Jesus? Is he living on the inside of you? And if he is, let's not get hung up over some of these man-made doctrinal differences. Let's just lock arms and go and minister to the needs of people who are hurting and broken out there. That's part of my message.
Very well said, Nikita. I personally am a lifelong Roman Catholic, and again, we tend to find ourselves on the outside looking in a lot of times from some of the more fundamentalist denominations that kind of tend to band together. So I perfectly understand what you're talking about as far as the sectarianism that's out there. It does. In a way it seems ridiculous, and I feel like I'm a little bit less naive, so I'm glad you said that for me. Like, you know, why can't we all just get on the same page here?
I've got some great Catholic friends who just love Jesus, and I'm like, you know, and you know, we're not debating what's stitched on our on our polo shirt. We're just saying, hey, let's talk about relationship here. Let's talk about personal relationship, one with Christ himself, and then secondly with one another, and let's just go out and let's just meet people where they're at and help them with their needs and just love on them with the love of Christ. I mean, come on. So.
Well, in terms of what leads us down this path here, I have to mention also, too, and I want to ask you about this as far as the perception a lot of times with wrestlers who've gone down the evangelistic path. I have to say, you're one of the few people that I've seen attached to this where I really haven't seen any kind of degree of skepticism attached to it, because when we had Tully and Lex on the show, both of them had mentioned that, you know, they've been down difficult paths prior to that, probably had some things to live down personally. I know that Shawn Michaels separately in interviews has said the same thing and has admitted to being a jerk about a lot of stuff, so... But you, from everything I can see, never had the reputation of being a jerk to anybody prior to this. So I'm wondering, does that make it a little bit easier in terms of avoiding a sense of skepticism from people if they feel that you're not trying too hard to live down what you did previously?
I don't know. I mean, now, depending on who you talk to, Rick, there's probably a few out there who think I really was a jerk, right? And quite truthfully, here's kind of my joke in church. I'm like, you know, I was stone cold long before Steve Austin, okay? And what I mean by that is, you know, prior to my salvation, man, I had a heart. I mean, I wasn't this guy out there who was, you know, doing the drugs and getting drunk every night and chasing women. And I didn't do all of that. that wasn't who I was, even prior to my salvation. So I didn't fit into that, you might say, kind of that category. But at the same time, I also, you know, it was my world. You were just living in it, and if you didn't like it, don't let the door hit you on the rear end on the way out. But I always tried to, in regards to wrestling or life itself, you know, be very professional, be very cordial, respectful of people. You know, did I get along with everybody? No, not necessarily, because people are people. And so, no, I didn't. But when I gave my heart to the Lord, you know, the Bible says, hey, he removes the heart of stone and gives you a heart of flesh and places his spirit in you. And that's what happened with me. And so moving forward then, keep in mind, there were still some skeptics, and there always will be. There will always be cynics. There will always be skeptics. And I think that's human nature as well. But I never let that bother me. You know, I get the feedback, especially for some of the guys in the business, oh, Nikita's doing that Jesus thing. I don't know, you know, yeah, okay, whatever. That'll wear off after a while and move on to something else. Well, almost 20-something years later, almost 21 years later, and I love the Lord more today than I did the first day I surrendered my heart to him. And so I suppose in one sense, there wasn't as much, as you might say, dirty laundry to have to come clean with in my life. So perhaps maybe it has been a little easier transition than Lex and Tully and, you know, maybe a few of the other guys. But nevertheless, I have had my share of skeptics and cynics.
Well, that's interesting. I just hadn't seen any that were out there. I've of course seen them with some of the other guys, and that was a topic of conversation with Lex and Tully as far as things that they've had to go through along that path. But again, they like you have been out there and have been setting such a good example for people. And you know, again, that's something that we really appreciate with this program, and really want to commend all of you guys that are doing such a great job in this. And clearly, you're doing the same thing. You're spreading a lot of the same word with the Preacher's Daughters program on Lifetime. What's your sense of the future of that program as far as how long that chance to run? Clearly, I know that it would be tremendous if it could be following your daughter through at least the early parts of college, but what's it looking like for the future of that program?
Well, you know, we've just kind of taken it one season at a time. You know, as we move into season two, they brought a couple new families aboard, and you know, these girls would appear to be another shade on the wild side, you know, which, again, one of the things we've tried or we hoped would portray through the show is that Preacher's Daughters aren't perfect. No, nobody is. That they face the same temptations and challenges as well as anybody else, and sometimes unfairly so, added pressures put upon them because they are a preacher's daughter or a preacher's kid, and so a different level of expectation, different level of pressure and stress is put upon them, and sometimes that has led to them being, you know, a little bit more rebellious, just to prove that they are normal, you might say, right? So, you know, I guess our hope is that as with season one, that come the conclusion of season two, that what people will see is they are just real people. They are normal. They have normal challenges like all of us and anyone else. But at the end of the day, they do have their faith that they get to hold on to. And through their faith, hopefully that brings restoration, in some cases reconciliation, redemption. And you know, that's what Lex experienced. He experienced redemption through salvation. You know, for us, for our family, if the show did nothing else for nobody else, you know, we're a divorced family. So we have been able to navigate divorce. The show has literally brought communication together through the family, healing to the hearts of our girls, and open up a door of communication with their mother and I, which has been a huge deal for our family. Now, with that said, Colby has become just really all the girls have become, you know, just a role model of sorts for their different generations, and especially Colby for her young generation has developed an amazing following. Her and Sadie Robertson from Duck Dynasty developed a weekly show on YouTube called The New Different, which I think has like a, I don't know, it's like a 500,000 views or I don't know how all that works. I'm not a techie guy, but they have developed an incredible following on YouTube now. So it's, I don't know. I don't know what the future holds totally, Rick.
Well, in the present, at the very least, it's great that people are able to see what kind of a tremendous family that you have, and that, again, everything that you're looking to do as far as being impactful in people's lives, that the program, like your ministry, is able to help do that. That's a wonderful thing, certainly. And I have to say, Nikita, I've never been somebody who's put any stock in one-size-fits-all maxims, so I have sort of categorically always rejected out of hand the notion of never meet your heroes, you will only be disappointed. I could say I knew I would not be disappointed. It was great talking to you. And again, as I flash back on all my days of wearing the Nikita Koloff T-shirt back in the day, one that still barely fits me. But again, I have looked forward to this conversation for quite a while now. And as I said, from my point of view, certainly really look up to the billing. Please don't be a stranger, sir. Love to talk to you again as things are going along with your career and your ministry.
Well, I appreciate it. Hey, I'm just impressed after all these years when you say, even though you can barely fit in the T-shirt, the fact that you can still fit it, into it is impressive enough. You know what? One of the things Lex and I have partnered up on too is, you know, we do we're very very outspoken advocates on health and wellness, and he and I you know have our businesses that we work together in helping people get physically healthy. And the ministry, of course, helps people get spiritually healthy. But, you know, we're very much like backgrounds, he and I. And so, hey, if you ever need any advice on health and wellness, you know who to call. You can call Lex or myself, and we'll be glad to lend many decades of experience and expertise for you or anyone else. So appreciate you having me on the show tonight. It's just been a privilege for me. And just helping me get the word out there on what we're doing and who we are. And people, you know, can go to my website and they can read a lot more about the Nikita Koloff and family. And we appreciate that. Maybe just post the website up there or something.
Absolutely. And the URL for that, of course, is NikitaKoloff.com. People can go there and check out everything going on with your ministry. I know there's some stuff on there about the fitness as well, and certainly you and Lex are great testaments to what can be done through working out and trying to stay healthy. So, again, you have a lot that can be spread helpful to people in a lot of ways, nourishing the soul and the body, as it were. So certainly hope people go check all that out, NikitaKoloff.com. Again, Nikita, the pleasure was all mine and all ours. Really appreciate it. Love to talk to you again here at your convenience. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
All right, Rick, you and all the listeners out there, may the Lord bless you and keep you. And I just thank you again for the opportunity. Have a wonderful weekend.
Appreciate it. God bless, Nikita. Thank you so much. And thank
bless
you all
you.
For tuning in, everybody, to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 398.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.